going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. It is the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and it is officially official. It is for real, for real. Canada, Toronto, is getting a WNBA team. 2026 cannot come soon enough. Everyone came out for the event, whether it's Masai Ujiri, Scottie Barnes, Kyle Lowry, Drake, Tammy Sutton Brown, Stacey Dales, Commissioner Kathy Engelbert, and the key person on stage, other than Larry Tannenbaum, the principal owner, would be a big part of this new franchise and a big part of Kilmer Sports Group, and that would be Teresa Resch, the president, the first president of Toronto's WNBA franchise, the 14th franchise in the WNBA, the first international franchise, which, not that you care for my opinion, I think it's going to be a strength. When you look at how international the women's game already is in terms of where great players are produced, but more importantly, what women have had to do for a long time to make a decent living in this sport, they've had to get stamps in their passport. They've had to go abroad. So unlike in the NBA, where to start, essentially, some of the issues were people saying, oh, I don't get ESPN, or infamously, I don't want my kid to learn the metric system, or the color of the money is different. Now we're in a different place in the NBA where essentially every year the MVP is an international player, and almost half of the all NBA players are international players. The women's game has been in that place for a long time. So I actually think it is going to be an asset, not a disadvantage, that this team is set up in Canada, especially because when you look at the pipeline, some of the great players on the way in the high school system right now are, in fact, Canadian. That's my POV. But a POV on someone who is helping to pave the way for those young Canadian players and those young Canadian fans, those young Canadian future entrepreneurs in the sport of basketball, future employees in the sport of basketball, because it is not a zero-sum game where we are just looking to develop players. We're developing and fostering a basketball community, a basketball sub-economy. Someone who's helping us do that is Teresa Resch. Her first order of business is outfitting the team with a name and a logo and players and a GM and coach. And I have some opinions on who that could be, but we can get on that issue later. I want to hear from her what the main pressing issues of the day-to-day is and how she plans to go 0 to 100 real quick for Toronto's first WNBA franchise. Let's go deep and listen to and learn from Teresa Resch on WNBA Toronto. So T, I feel like I should be giving you congrats and condolences at the same time. Congrats because this baby is born. It's here. People are excited to meet it and see it. But condolences because now you have to raise the baby. And the hard work really starts in building essentially a franchise from the ground up. Talk me through personally the emotions that you're going through dealing with this as it's happening.
Well, thanks for having me, Donovan. I feel like condolences, any parents would hopefully not say that when their child is born and then helping them grow. I think it's more about uncertainty, and you're never going to know quite exactly the personality of this person and this baby that you just birthed. And I think that very much can be said for this organization. WNBA Toronto is going to have a personality. It's going to grow. It's going to evolve. And it's really uncertain exactly what shape or direction that's going to go because so many different variables are going to impact it. But that's also what makes it really exciting. So what has been experienced in the last 2 weeks has been incredible. We always knew that this was going to be really well supported, but the reaction and the response we've had has been incredible. A lot of work to do, like you said. Top priority is building out our team of staff immediately. Next year, end of this calendar, next year we'll focus more on the technical side, being a GM and a coach so that I can prepare next season and get ready for our roster that will start in the fall of 2025 with the expansion draft. And so we look forward to growing our team, growing our staff, joining Patrick Lee and I to get a name and logo for this team, to get some sponsors on board, to start correspondence with all the people who have become our first members and our first season seat holders. Great to have over 3,000 people on our season seat list. That's for the games in Toronto. And then we're growing our membership list. That will be priority for games we play outside of Toronto. So look forward to really starting the dialogue with those people.
You talk about that list of priorities. Do you have counsel, best advice from others who have done it in the past on how to do this in some sort of system, an organizational way that makes sense so that you're building, putting those Lego pieces together in a way that makes sense?
Yeah, what's great about women's sports specifically is that there's been a huge growth phase in the last, I'm going to say 10 years, probably longer than that. So you have a lot of different sports organizations who have started from scratch during that time period. And what's also great is there's a wonderful community that wants everybody to succeed. There's not a lot of competitive on the field or court. There's definitely competition, but not when we're talking about lifting up organizations and setting them up for success. So there's been teams and soccer, obviously the Golden State Valkyries. I have calls with them all the time on how they're building out their organization. And it's great to have those people cheering for you and willing to share a lot of really valuable information.
The difference between them and you would be a tie to an existing NBA franchise in a more official capacity. We've seen in the W, as it's evolved, the hybrid of multiple approaches. Both have been successful. For Kilmer and yourself specifically, what are the challenges and advantages to building it the way you are, essentially, without being tied to an NBA franchise?
I mean, I think anytime you're building from scratch, there's going to be challenges you don't anticipate. I mean, you can talk to any entrepreneur that's done it multiple times, and everyone's a little bit different. Like you said, this is a baby, right? If you have multiple kids, you know they all have different personalities. They all have their unique challenges, and I think it's no different for sports organizations. So looking forward to understanding what those things are. I think we have an all unbelievable owner at the helm and Larry Tenenbaum, who's going to support us and resource us so that we can build this franchise to be successful. Anytime you're dealing with people, there's always challenges, and we're in the business of people. You know, the team is made up of high performing elite professional athletes that are surrounded by the experts in their field. And all those people have opinions and ways of doing things and directions. So to be able to like build those teams and strategize is going to be a challenge, but also really, really exciting and invigorating. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to having everybody that is working for this team focused and passionate about one direction. Really excited about building that team and aligning on our vision and values and creating them. You know, like we get to create those from scratch too and see how those take shape over time as well, organically. There's going to be challenges though. I think anytime you start from scratch, you know, we have to build the fan base from zero. We have to get people to believe and to understand who we are. There's so many things that is going to dictate the success of this organization. But ultimately, I think that there's a very large population of women's sports fans and women's basketball fans, specifically in Canada. And for this team to be really successful, we need to get people who have never cared about basketball or women's sports to really care about us and want to know our stories and tell our story to others. So that's our challenge, and I'm looking forward to it.
talk about building culture, and you know, a big piece of your job at the Raptors, other than doing a lot of things that nobody knew about or making sure they got done before they were bigger issues, was building a championship culture. When you apply your time there to what you're building now, knowing that they're different leagues and certainly different teams, is there anything you'd want to apply from that culture into what you're building with WNBA Toronto?
Yeah, I think that we all bring our past experiences to the table when we're starting anything new. And the Raptors and the role that they played in my life for the last 11 years was huge. So I'm definitely going to bring those lived experiences to the table with WNBA Toronto. And what I look forward to is bringing on board a team of people who are going to bring their experiences as well, their lived experiences. And by combining those things, we'll build a culture. And I'm really excited to build that with them and really see how it takes shape, because I think that's ultimately what culture is it's the lived experiences of the people that make up this group. And how they interact and shape each other. So really looking forward to building that with the team here once we have a few more people on board.
One of the constant conversations with Toronto's NBA franchise historically, whether it was real or just perceived, was the difficulty to convince American players to play in Canada, specifically high-level free agents. The WNBA culturally, progressively, is a different league, but it is still a team in a different country. Do you imagine having a barrier of entry into recruitment because of the geography of the franchise?
Every organization in the W has pros and cons. You know, I think with athletes today, they want to play in a team where they feel like they can compete at the highest level, compete for championships. So we look forward to building a team that has that to offer. I think that Toronto, WNBA being in a different country is another variable that will factor into players' decisions. I think that it can positively or negatively impact those decisions depending upon the player. And I would say that that's probably the case for every single market in this league. So it's just a matter of making sure that we're talking about the things that are beneficial and understanding how that impacts players. I've learned over time, and this is not just unique to the NBA, but to all sports leagues, the thing that speaks loudest about where, if players have the option to pick where they play, is other players' experiences in that market. So I look forward to, from the very beginning, providing an athlete experience unlike none other, and I think that will speak volumes.
Such an interesting time in women's sports in our country, an exciting time. You know, we have the NSL and six domestic soccer teams starting, and they, you know, announced their structure and their name. Obviously, the PWHL has had an outstanding first season, and I'm really curious to see all of these things happen around the same time because they're very different. Your franchise is an expansion franchise of an existing league. The PWHL is a league that started from scratch but had the benefit of recruiting a bunch of the best players in the world, and the Canadian Domestic Soccer League for women will have to loan or recruit players who are already playing in existing leagues. Those leagues, however, certainly will always have Canadians. It'll be mandated in the case of soccer, at least 50% of the best players on the women's side in hockey are Canadian. For your team and your franchise, is having Canadian representation on the court point of emphasis? Does it matter?
What I'm looking forward to is actually the impact this team is going to have on future generations. So right now in the WNBA, there are four Canadians. So four out of 144 players. This team is going to add 12 more roster spots. The Golden State team is going to add 12 more roster spots. And the W has said that there is going to be two more teams joining the league by, I believe it was 2028, Kathy said. So that means that there's going to be 48 more players in a league that currently has 144 players. So there's just going to be more opportunity. And I believe that Canadian players are therefore going to be more prevalent. The other thing I believe that's going to happen is the mere presence of this team in Canada is going to inspire a whole new generation of girls and young women to play the sport. The more people you have playing the sport, the more likelihood that there are going to be a few at the most elite level. We hope to impact the training around these players, the coaching, the resources of referees, all those things that contribute to really the pathway of a girl from when they first pick up a ball to when they play a house league, when they play at U Sports, if they go down to the States to play in university, and then ultimately hopefully make it into the league. Now, if they actually play on our specific team is yet to be determined. There's obviously a lot of different rules about draft order and free agency and roster spots and things like that. So we hope to have Canadians on our team at some point. I think that the more and more Canadians that enter the league, the better the chances are that they'll find a home on our team at WNBA Toronto.
You talked about resources, and in women's sport, for a long time, it wasn't just about having a professional league to play in. It was about having a professional atmosphere to be your best to play in. What does that look like for you at the start and moving forward with training and practices at UFT and playing on the exhibition grounds? What do you look to provide from an experience standpoint for your players at the beginning? And then how will you be able to improve that as the years go on?
Yeah, we look forward to playing at Coca-Cola Coliseum on exhibition grounds. I was there for the very first ever PWHL playoff game in May this month here, and it was an unbelievable atmosphere, and I cannot wait to pack that place with basketball fans. It's going to be an incredible place to play. We look forward to having the demand outsize us from that location. We look forward to leveling up into 20,000 seat arena, both in Toronto as well as across Canada at different points in time. And then I think as far as like the player experience, as you said, we're going to start with practicing out of the University of Toronto's Gold Ring Center, which is a beautiful facility. Obviously, it won't be ours dedicated, but we do look forward to breaking ground and building a practice facility down the road. It's something that our ownership group has committed to and was part of the member agreement that we signed with the W. So we're going to make good on our promise. Now, I have to admit, like, that is not the number one priority right now. So you're going to have to wait a little bit longer to get full details on that because it doesn't exist. But it is something that we made the commitment to the league to do. And honestly, like, we need to do that in order to create a space for these women to really perform their best. And more than anything, as you talked about, making sure we have the best environment for them to succeed, therefore the best players will want to be part of it.
In terms of resources and having specific dedicated places to play for female athletes at various levels, whether it's community, intercollegiate, national team, or now professional team, what is the continued need to find solutions like potentially the training center that you're looking to build in the future?
Yeah, I think infrastructure is always a barrier to growth of any league. And I think investing in the infrastructure that creates a good pathway for basketball is paramount. So we need to have more community centers. We need to have more outdoor courts so people can just go and play casually, as well as having elite level. So like I said, it's every step on the pathway. So how are people first getting exposed to the sport in a casual way, whether it's through their high school curriculum or sort of their elementary school curriculum or the park down the street? And then from there, where do they hone their skills? Like maybe at some of those places, but then it's usually an elevated youth center. And then from there, it's usually connected to their education institution, whether it's secondary school, high school, or college. And I think you see in youth sports investments being done in Canada, you see it investments in the States, significant investment in infrastructure. And then ultimately at the most elite level now, we're making the investment in the infrastructure. But I think it's really about not just the physical spaces, but also the people you're surrounding the players with. So I think as Canadians, and Canada Basketball has really led that, we've invested in coaching curriculum. We're investing in women's coaching specifically. So coaching a boys team from the ages of 12 to 16 is different than coaching a girls team from the ages of 12 to 16. How are we making sure that our coaches are equipped to get the best and make sure that the curriculum is for that group of people. Understanding that referees are a huge shortage, we need to make sure that we're developing those as well so that they can play a game with the correct rules and something that they, is a controlled environment. But then there's also, I think sometimes the opportunity to play is connected to these very structured organizations where we need to also allow for kids to play casually and like come up with their own ways of playing and like being able to test out different shots and different, not even different shots, but necessarily like how to play the game and create that evolution, that creativity, which actually makes the sport really, really fun. So I mean, to answer your question, the infrastructure has to be built in many ways beyond just beyond the physical court. And I think that there's a lot of different organizations who are attacking that. And it's a great platform that we have on this team to help and support and elevate a lot of the good work that's being done. And then also hopefully be able to impact that structure as a whole.
This is the longest you've probably gone on these chats before someone has asked you about the name. So let's go there so people can stop screaming at their favorite podcast player. I'm sure you've gotten unsolicited opinions on what the name should be. I'm interested to hear, one, the process and what that'll look like in terms of canvassing for ideas and eventually selecting a name, and the criteria in terms of it is a franchise that will mainly be in Toronto, but will it be intentional about representing the entire country? Does that factor into the naming culture for this team?
Absolutely, Donovan. We want to have a team name and logo that really represents all of Canada, the strength of the country and the strength of the women that will be representing the country. And you're right, a lot of unsolicited names have been thrown out there in the public sphere. We will definitely have channels where the community can input and provide inspiration for the final decision. Stay tuned for exactly what those channels are. And the great thing about the WNBA is, much like the NBA, they've also embraced changing of jerseys throughout the time to really bring to life unique characteristics of the marketplace. So we look forward to having our team identity, our name and logo, but then we also look forward to using some of this input that we have to create our Rebel uniform in years to come. So we will have two uniforms to start in 2026, and we'll add a third one in 2027, and then that third one will continue to evolve during our time. So lots of fun things to look forward to.
Is there one name that sticks out that you've heard that is the worst idea?
Oh, I'm not listening to any right now. It's a clean slate for me. Clean slate for me.
I want to talk about not just this opportunity for this franchise, but the league to expand, to go international. You have another TV contract on the way and more expansion and more cities interested than vacant spots, quite frankly. I'm constantly having conversation with friends of mine, and one who's in investment says this is a league that hasn't historically made a profit. I don't necessarily think it's a wise investment, but many smart people, including Larry Tannenbaum, have thought otherwise. What specifically about the W right now is to you the growth sign that, yeah, we're on the merge of something even bigger than what we have right now in the future?
The way people spend their time and energy and money equates to dollars and profitability. And if you look around even yourself, or you look around the people you are surrounding you, you see a huge influx of people's time, energy, and money going to women's sports like it never has before. And if you look at viewership, you look at sponsorship dollars, you look at people playing, you look at merchandise, it's exponentially growing. And I think that that's a huge trigger of how you can understand that this is on a rocket ship towards profitability.
Lastly, before I let you go, I want to ask you about the one thing I know you don't want to talk about, and that's yourself. This is a huge opportunity for you in your career. You, not too long ago, made the choice to get your Canadian citizenship, something you didn't necessarily have to do. You made the choice to take on this opportunity when it's not out of the realm of possibility. You would have had a similar opportunity working in the NBA or at the league office once again, or in another sports or even outside of sports. What has this opportunity meant to you? Why did it make sense for you at this point?
It's a great question, Donovan. You know, I spent, like I said, 11 years with the Raptors. Before that, I was at the league office working in professional NBA. And ultimately, being one of the only women in some of those rooms. And it was great to have that platform and to know that my voice was being listened to and I had the impact on the organization and the direction it was going. But ultimately, I wanted to work in women's sports and I wanted to elevate women's sports and being able to take all those lived experiences and put them towards, like I said, an industry that is on a rocket ship. I mean, if you can get in at the beginning on something that you believe in and something that you, all the signs are pointing to be very successful, if you get the right people around it and you continue to, I don't want to say ride the wave, because that has definitely, a lot of people have put a lot of hard work into making it churn. It's a no-brainer, honestly. Like, for me, it was a natural next step, and I'm really, really fortunate to have the opportunity. There's only 14 teams in the WNBA right now. It's even more exclusive than the NBA. And to be able to be able at the helm of one of them is, I mean, I'm lucky. It's when preparation met opportunity, and I'm just really lucky to be able to have the platform and this opportunity.
Lucky is not a term I would use, because you certainly earned it and got it out of the mud. And I mean, Masai's probably lucky that he was able to somehow keep you for as long as he did. And I think we're all fortunate as basketball fans and Canadians that we still have you, but in a different, but I would argue more important role right now. So thank you. Good luck with that baby that you're raising. Many people want to do two things. They want to help you do it. And I'm sure you've had lots of inquiries on that end. But they also want to watch it happen. So as we let you go, chance to promo, where can people go to, you know, be on the wave and get their tickets and memberships, depending on where they live? And if they too want to make a difference as someone working with women in sport, get more info on how they could potentially be part of the team that you're building.
So immediate action to take is get your name on that wait list. We don't want people to get your place, because it's all about priority. So it's WNBA.com/Toronto. On that page is our landing page. You'll see a link. You'll be able to sign up for, put down a deposit for season tickets, and those will all be in Toronto. And you can also put down a deposit for a membership. That is going to be first priority for any games we play outside of Toronto. There'll be other things that go along with the membership to be determined. You know, keep a close eye. We'll definitely be communicating those things out. And then the other spot on that webpage, you can sign up for a newsletter, communications going forward. You know, that's free. And then there'll also be a tab for career opportunities. We don't have any jobs posted quite yet, but we will be in the future. So you can also just submit your resume for future jobs and keep checking back. And then the other piece is just merchandise. We don't have anything yet, but keep an eye on it. Once we have a name and logo, we will be selling like hotcakes. I can't wait to get that out and about for our community. And then just follow us at social media, WNBA Toronto. We'll have all the updates there. And I think first and foremost, get your name on that wait list. And then from there, just follow us. Follow us, because there'll be lots of great information coming your way.
Can't wait to do it all. Thank you so much, Teresa.
Thanks, Donovan. It was great to chat with you.
Thank you so much to Teresa, president of WNBA Toronto. Her handle on X is at TA Resch, RESCH. Her handle on AIG is what she's doing. At WNBA TO Prez is the handle. And as she mentioned, you can go to WNBA.com/Toronto for all of the information about memberships and tickets that she described, and you can give the franchise a follow. At WNBA underscore Toronto is their handle on IG. Now, let's get a handle on the pertinent issues of this current season in the W that has started off fantastically in so many different ways, so many storylines, and they're not all about Caitlin Clark, y'all. We're going to go deep on the league after the break.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. We keep going on our WNBA conversation in this episode, and we talk about this 2024 season that has had some wild finishes, some surprising start to the year, at least from my perspective. I don't know if I thought the Chicago Sky was going to be this good out the gate, even though they have two big-time draft picks in their lineup, and we'll talk about some of the terrible analysis that we've seen thus far. At least I think it's terrible. Someone who's giving us great analysis all the time is LaChyna Robinson. She's covered the sport for a long time for both ESPN and NBC. This summer, she's going to be covering the sport for NBC Universal at the Games in Paris. And so before she jets off, we wanted to make sure we got some time with her to talk about a great start to the W and now a Canadian franchise in the W. Let's listen to and learn from LaChyna Robinson as we go deep on the WNBA season. So as I'm sure you can imagine, we're so excited in Canada to finally have a team in the W. When you learned that this was going to be the next franchise and the next step for the league, what came to mind?
I was happy. I was happy for all of our women's basketball fans of the North because you guys have laid the groundwork for this. When I look at the history of women's basketball in Canada, my days go back to Tammy Sutton Brown, who was one of my favorite players, one of the OGs from Canada in the WNBA. And I know that there's been a relationship through the years with women's basketball here in the States and in Canada. So to see an official partnership, an official connection, I was super excited about that. But also when it comes to laying the groundwork, it's about attendance and support and the ability for Canada to really not only just have a WNBA team, but fully have success with a WNBA team and market, and watching the preseason metrics, you could tell that there was an excitement there, that the fans were behind it, that all of the people of Canada were looking forward to having the WNBA there. And now that it's permanent, it's an even bigger deal.
Do you suspect some of the American players will be meeting it with the same level of excitement, given the fact that just got proper travel, and now we're talking about traveling across a border? On the NBA side, there's been American players who have theoretically felt the type of way about playing for the franchise in Canada. Do you suspect that'll be the similar issue on the women's side?
No, actually, I didn't know that attitude existed with the NBA, but I know the women of the WNBA have been excited about expansion. And that the teams that have played in preseason games in Canada have been like, whoa, like that was an awesome experience. It's been nothing but positive. And I truly believe that everyone that's affiliated with the W understands how important expansion is, and especially, this step of going across the border, of going to, a place that has a successful NBA franchise. All of the indicators are that this would be successful. And I think because there has been intention behind every decision about expansion, like it's taken us long enough, right? So one would be led to believe that this was very diligent in terms of the homework, in terms of ensuring that this was a good landing spot for a new team. So I think the women are behind it, and the charter flights just make it even easier, right? Like what better timing, knowing the kind of travel that is going to happen. I mean, it's already rough going across the country, so I don't think it's anything that they would be, I don't think there's any concern there.
We know expansion is not going to stop here. It's not going to stay at 14. In terms of upcoming destinations that you think are viable and make sense, which cities and locales come to mind?
Yeah, when you say viable, I guess I have to take my fan hat off, right? Because I've got my wish list as a fan of the W and someone, you know, who grew up with the league. But then there are places that, you know, may make sense in terms of market. And when you look at the viewership of women's basketball, college, WNBA, there are some places that jump out. Louisville, Kentucky is somewhere that has consistently supported women's basketball, whether their teams are playing, just huge fans in that market. I know that I am someone who personally would love to see the Charlotte Sting resurrected. Notice that my teams are all here in the Southeast because I do believe we need another team in this area of the country. I am affiliated with the Atlanta Dream. I've worked with that organization for over 15 years. But the Charlotte Sting was the first place that I ever watched a WNBA game. So my heart is always for a resurrection of the Charlotte Sting. And then South Florida for a number of reasons. Serena Williams may be one of them. There used to be a Miami Soul team there in Florida. It seems like an amazing, incredible landing space for a W team. So fans of Philly and Northeast, they won't be happy with those selections. I know Portland's on the map and Denver's on the map. You know, I actually had a little bit of a concern around Denver, only because when you look at the demographics of Denver, it's not a very diverse place. And you're talking about moving a league there of majority Black women. So you want to make sure that they feel supported in all communities, that they feel, you know, whatever those cultural needs are, whatever, you know, they may need to feel supported. And so that was something that I looked at early, just because we're not used to seeing WNBA cities with such skewed demographics. Yeah, I am a little biased where I would like to see another team in the Southeast.
I think many people would like to see more teams anywhere just because there is a bad need for more roster spots because of the breadth of talented players. What will additional franchises do to maybe help that bottleneck of American and North American players trying to find jobs?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways you can do that, right? Expansion is one of the ways that you can add roster spots. You could also change the CBA. You can also add a WNBA G League. You know, expansion will add 12 players or, you know, for one team to the league. So we've got two on the way, so 24 new spots, which is huge. But it doesn't necessarily speak to the need for development per organization. So, for example, as you know, with the NBA, if you've got a G League team, those players are in that system. They're learning that specific system in case they get that call up. The WNBA, some rosters are carrying 11 players, and then 9 is the hardship number. You know, at 9, you can bring someone else in. So it's who do you bring in? Someone who maybe is not going to be able to help you because they haven't been learning your system. They've never maybe been with your team, but they are the best fit in terms of position. I would like to see actual rosters grow. Expansion, absolutely, number one, for a lot of other reasons. But if we're talking about player development and just having more spots for all the talent that there is in women's basketball, to me, that's a CBA situation.
That's a great point. When you look at this crop of new players coming into the league, this freshman class, if you will, great depth. You know, great stories, great fashion in many cases. What do you make of this really, really standout draft class?
I love this class. I love this class. This is a class of women who have had the WNBA as a thing their entire lives, right? The league is 28 years. Most of them are 21, 22. So they've grown up with that aspiration, with that vision of what they could be as professionals. They've also grown up in a great time for digital technology, where they have their phones and can watch highlights of WNBA players and can watch games digitally online. Like, this is something when I was younger, you know, we might have had two televised games when I was in college. nothing online. My mom, you know, she only had two opportunities to see us on TV. And so, you know, they're coming up at a time where they're having eyeballs on almost every game they're playing in. They also have extreme reach in their social media. When you look at the pipeline now for women's basketball players, their social media followings are starting with Overtime Elite, you know, some of the summer events that they're playing in, you know, Kevin Durant's event or whoever, Steph Curry, who now brings girls to his event. So they're growing their followings. And if you notice, a lot of the high school and college athletes have more followings than the pros. And so they're used to that media spotlight being on them. And this class was ready. Like, you put a microphone in their face and they know who they are. They know what they stand for. They understand their place in the game. They give flowers to those that came before them. But at the same time, when they step between the lines, they're trying to win. But they're very good. And when the lights have been bright on their actual play between the lines, they've delivered. I mean, they have played at a high level with expectations through the roof. Through our most viewed women's basketball broadcasts, they brought us every moment of entertainment and drama and big buckets that we could have asked for. So this class is just special, very different, very unapologetic in who they are, but also understanding how important of a window of time this is for women's basketball. And they are excited to lead this charge.
Probably the first time you've been hit up to do one of these many interviews that you've been doing. And it's been, you know, 5+ minutes until someone asked you about Caitlin Clark. I'm a little exasperated, not of her, but of the conversation around her in terms of people assuming that she was going to be Candace Parker, I suppose, and win an MVP out the gate, or people thinking that if she has one night that she's a bust, or people thinking that the best players in the world should just roll out a red carpet for her. What do you make both of her start, but of the reaction to her start?
Her start was everything I've expected. I think the problem here is that not very many people have watched the WNBA. So they come from college basketball, and we deal with this every year, not to this degree because of Caitlin Clark's stardom, but every year we come into WNBA season saying, there are going to be some of your favorite college players that will get cut. There are going to be some first rounders that don't make a roster. Like, this is a league of the best women's basketball players in the world. And to your point, they're not going to pull out the red carpet. They're trying to make a living. They're trying to do what they love. They're trying to make a roster spot themselves. And so Caitlin has started the way I expected. I knew she would struggle with the physicality of the game, with the athleticism, with the speed. That's normal for a rookie. And for some, it's even tougher. She doesn't have physical attributes that really separate her, like the things I just named. She is kind of lanky, but not incredibly fast, not incredibly athletic, not quick, any of those things. So anyone who actually watched her play and knows the WNBA knew that she would struggle. I thought she would probably be flirting with the triple-double every night, right? Because she's an incredible passer. She can rebound. And her numbers have consistently been around that, you know, 5, 6, 7 assists or rebound a night, but can she create the separation to get her shot off? That's what she was so good at college. And I think she's going to have to play a different game. There will be some time she can get off one-on-one, but I think she's going to have to play off the ball a little bit more, be able to come off screens. So it's an always developing storyline, but the way that she's been handled, it just strikes me as very uneducated. Like, most of the people who are making these comments around Caitlin Clark is on the worst team, that's why she's not good. Well, that's how drafts work. The number one player usually goes to the team that's not doing that well. Or, you know, the WNBA players are trying to beat Caitlin up. They don't want her to be successful. It's just, everyone should not have a platform to just say whatever it is they think makes sense. Because it doesn't. But I do think the media has probably over-focused on Caitlin quite a bit. She is a phenomenon, so I don't know that any of us know exactly how to handle this whole thing. But my hope is that you come in, you focus on Caitlin, and while you're there, you notice that there's a heck of a lot of other really good players in the league and that you'll want to support the rest of the WNBA along with Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, sadly, she's been at times flirting with a quadruple double when you throw the turnovers. Fill in the blank for me. The notion from many, multiple notable men, that women are hating on Caitlin Clark is
insane. It's insane. It really is. I'm trying to like put in perspective what do they mean by hating on her? You know, the women of this league, whether they're on the same team together, they play in the Olympics together. Many of them are teammates overseas with other players in the WNBA that they don't play with during the season. Not to say that there aren't some rivalries or some heated moments. You saw Dejanay and Marina. Like, you've got the people that you kind of have this back and forth with, and it's fine. They didn't even give any WNBA players a chance to develop that rivalry with Caitlin or to have a back and forth moment with her because it was automatically like, oh, y'all are hating. No, they are just letting you know that it's not going to be easy. And they were right. And this notion that everyone should in the WNBA should be thanking, or all the players should be thanking her for the success of the league, they all do. Like, they all are like excited about the eyeballs because that means they get more eyeballs. That means, you know, this media rights deal is going to be even bigger. That means they've got more of a leg to stand on for the collective bargaining agreement. They're not stupid. They're businesswomen. They understand that Caitlin is moving the needle. And most of them are very grateful for this entire rookie class because it's not just Caitlin. And that's the part I think we need to really also be willing to speak out loud, is that Angel Reese moves the needle as well. She may not move the corporate needle. She may not move the majority, you know, America needle, but she absolutely makes people want to buy tickets, buy gear, tune in. And so the notion that anyone is hating on Caitlin Clark is insane. And it's really, it's like, stop treating women's sports like, you know, this all, everybody has to be best friends. Like, you don't have to be best friends with Caitlin, but they're going to compete against her between the lines and they're going to appreciate what she brings economically.
No question. We often criticize male players for being too close, and yet we have a different perspective on the women. You talk about the economics. I was thinking of Caitlin looking at this, you know, USA team that's going to suit up in Paris and thinking to myself, you can make a strong argument. She's not one of the 12 best American female basketball players in the world, but also she and Angel Reese, who I believe last I checked has more followers than she does, move the needle. And does it matter? Could you just carry them four eyeballs and still win? The answer is yes, you could. Who do you see as, I use the word threat, you know, somewhat facetiously, but the biggest competition for the USA team internationally this summer?
Oh man, that's a good question. You know, I think Australia is always a threat, right? Especially if Lauren Jackson ends up suiting up again, because she's been playing very well. I think they're always in the conversation. You know, Spain has had some really, really good teams over the last few years. They're younger players who are now older. They definitely are a team I think could compete. Canada, ton of respect for what, you know, Canada puts on the court from an Olympic standpoint. I don't know where everyone is injury-wise and rosters. Not exactly sure where every country lies from that standpoint. Someone that I thought may be in the conversation at this point was Belgium, but they've had some pretty significant injuries. But you know what? What we've seen, especially coming off of our last Olympics, is that the competition across the world is getting better, right? Like, there used to be, I feel like, a larger margin between the U.S. women and everyone else. But there's a heck of a lot of respect. And again, I go back to the fact that WNBA players play overseas internationally in the off season. So there's a ton of respect for the international game. I haven't really been digging deep into my Olympic notes quite yet, but I would say those are a few teams that I'm always traditionally intrigued by in terms of what kind of product they would put on the court.
Mentioned Canada. I want to ask you about our captain, Natalie Achonwa, who has a great career at Notre Dame. Obviously, great years in WNBA, not on a team currently, will be on a Team Canada, and potentially down the stretch might be able to prove to get back on a roster. Even though the league is certainly progressive, it hasn't been all that different than the rest of the corporate world when dealing with pregnant women. Where do you think the league is in terms of the viability and ability for not just stars, but for all players to be able to continue to have a career post pregnancy?
There's a ton of work that needs to be done. And there will be an opportunity in this CBA to correct some things that we have realized in recent years have been blatantly missing from a collective bargaining standpoint. I tip my hat to the last CBA negotiations and what they were able to get with maternity leave. But what we're realizing is there's a lot more that goes into those conversations around women, their bodies, their career, and maternity. And it's crazy some of the extremes that I've heard and where we should be treating maternity leave like an injury. Like, you're not available. You're not physically able to play. So how is the league accommodating for this from a available bodies standpoint? It's crazy, some of the things that we're talking about. But it is a sport in which your physical availability, if you will, is how you make your living, right? But how do we support these women and how do we help them get back to a place where they can compete and be competitive after giving birth? I think so much work needs to be done, and so much work needs to be done from a human resources standpoint with these teams and organizations and front offices and how they're negotiating, how they're trading or moving players or how they're cutting players based on their plans to embark on motherhood or post maternity leave. There's a lot of groundwork that needs to be laid. We've seen several cases over the last few years, whether it was Skylar Diggins-Smith or De'Erica Hamby, where those situations weren't handled the way they should have been. And I think these women deserve better. Natalie looks great. I mean, she looks like she is in the best shape I've ever seen her in. And so my hope is that she will absolutely be able to achieve whatever it is that looks like for her, playing Team Canada, getting back to the WNBA. But it's not easy. It's not easy for women who don't have an active career, like physically active career, to come back from maternity leave and try to make a living. Like, this is how these women make their living. So I think a lot of work still needs to be done.
And lastly, before we let you go, you're going to be working this summer. What can we expect from the coverage and from you?
A lot of fun. I actually got to fill in for Kara Lawson when she was the 3x3 coach in our Tokyo Olympics, and I had a blast. I've never worked with Noah Eagle, but I've admired his work from afar. And I actually have one of my mentees, Zora Stevenson. She came through my Rising Media Stars program, so she'll be our sideline reporter along with Kareth Burke in some of the earlier rounds. But I'm expecting a lot of fun. Tokyo was a different Olympics for all of us. With no fans, no media. So I'm looking forward to, Paris is one of my favorite cities, and just getting back to the people and the experience for these athletes, because that's what really makes it special, and to watch the best compete on the highest stage.
Well, we can't wait to watch as well. We'll be following up until then. Enjoy the games, and thank you so much for your coverage and perspective.
Thanks, Donovan. Appreciate you having me, and congrats on the team.
Thanks so much, Latana, for making so much time for us. Give her some time. Give her a follow on X at Latana Robinson is her handle. And also, she's got a real cool initiative called Rising Media Stars. It's a nonprofit that provides training for women of color that want to work in sports broadcasting the exact same way that she has. She's one of the co-founders. You can give that group a follow. At Rising M Stars is the handle, or just go to risingmediastars.com. I love how she's a real one, in the sense that she lifts as she climbs in this media industry. She's climbed to the point where she is one of the best in the business, and she's now raising the next generation in the business. So nothing but love and flowers to LaChyna for that. Same for you for listening this far. Listen, this is not just a podcast or a platform where we are going to break down the X's and O's in the big four traditional leagues or sports. We love to get deep on the conversations that you care about, that I certainly care about, and that Canadians and people across the country care about. So the fact that you've made so much time to listen to a podcast about the growth of the WNBA is impactful and meaningful, and continue to follow and support, because we need more options for all sports fans, not just young girls. We'll have more conversations like this on the podcast coming up, so stay tuned. Make sure you subscribe. If you do like what you've heard and you're still listening to me, so evidently you do, well then hit us up with some 5 stars. No cost to you. Just take your thumb or index finger, slide it to the 5, and close the app. Because we don't want you to be accruing data when you don't need to. More than anything, enjoy the wonderful of sports we have on the calendar right now. Thanks for listening. Talk soon.